Thank you, Jason, for leading those songs. We'd like to invite you, if you want to, go ahead and open up your Bibles. We'll be in Luke chapter 15 this evening. Luke chapter 15. We're looking at some of Jesus' life here. And as we think about, as we begin to think about this tonight, I want us to start thinking about names. Names are very important to us in life, aren't they? They help us to identify things. They help us know who each other are. They help us be able to differentiate between people. Because if we didn't have names, otherwise we would all just be, "Hey, you." That was my mom's favorite name growing up, was "Hey, you." But names are so important. And names are very hard. It's hard to come up with names, especially as you start having children, because there's all these unwritten rules about names. You know, if you've ever dated a guy or girl that has a certain name, you cannot name your child that name. If there was somebody in your family who didn't like a particular name, that name as well is off limits. If you've ever named a child, you can probably sympathize a little bit with Adam, can't you? Have you ever sat and thought about what an enormous task that was? As at the beginning of time, God asked him to sit down under a tree and says, "Okay, Adam, it's time to name things." And to look at all of the plants, all of the living things that are on this earth, and to sit there and have to give them names. Can you imagine that? What a funny picture that must have been as he was trying to come up with names for everything. Where would we be? What would we do in this world if we didn't have names? If we didn't have names to call each other by, if we didn't have names to name our restaurants by, would we just go without names? Would it just be a nameless society? I don't think so. I think that we would probably find a way, we would have come up with a way to name things, to be able to talk about things. Because I think, you know, if anything, the story of Adam to me shows the importance that God puts on being able to name things, being able to identify things for what they are, for who they are. Names, more often than not, become labels in our lives. We associate those names with memories. We were talking about, you know, the naming of your child. You can't name it a certain ex-boyfriend or girlfriend's name because there are memories associated with that name. You can't name your child after somebody that you didn't get along with very well in school because there are memories associated with those names. You have to be very careful as well. You have to consider first name and last name combinations, don't you? Because if you're not careful, sometimes you come up with something like the Mann family did. They had a beautiful baby daughter, and they named her Anita. So she goes through her life being Anita Mann. And if you go to the internet, you can actually search for strange names like this. So I did a little search, and just a couple of my favorites were the Wright family had a beautiful daughter as well, but her name became Eileen. So Eileen Wright. Maybe my favorite was Lois Price. But then there was one unfortunate young woman. Her name was Helen. She fell in love with a young man whose last name was Back. So for her married life, she was known as Helen Back. And after a few years, her husband said, "That's about the truth of it." Every organization is known by their names. I mean, there's not a lot of things, there's nothing out there that doesn't have a name, that doesn't have a way for us as individuals to be able to identify it, to be able to tell it apart from the other businesses, the other companies. Because when you want a McDonald's hamburger, you don't want to stop short at Hardee's just because you don't have a way to differentiate. When we turn into the Bible and we start looking at the church and its beginnings, we find in Acts chapter 9 that it was first called the Way, because we didn't know what to name it. At that point, it was just the Way. And the Way was, it was a verb, it was a noun as well. You know, it was a noun in the sense that it was a name. It's a verb in the sense that it was the way people acted. It was very descriptive because they followed Jesus. They were the way that followed Jesus. So they were doing things the way that he did it, the way that he did things. You know, it's taking care of people, loving people, all of that good stuff. And then a couple of chapters later in Acts chapter 11, we find that now they're called Christians at Antioch. You know, we're still talking about the way, but now they're called Christians because they are Christ-like. Two different names for the same group of people. The same people who are out there trying to follow Jesus to be more like him each and every day. And sometimes it's amazing where the name Christian has gone, isn't it? Because I don't know that Christian, the word Christian today, carries with it the exact same connotation that it might have carried when it was first coined there in Antioch. We find in the Bible all kinds of different names for Jesus. You know, the Wonderful Counselor, the Prince of Peace, the Mighty God, the Eternal Father, just to name a few. There's a whole poster in the back that just has a list of names. It's incredible how long it is. But there's one special one that I want us to focus on tonight, and we find it here in Luke chapter 15, just the first couple of verses. It says that the tax collectors and sinners were all crowding around to listen to Jesus. So the Pharisees and the teachers of the law of Moses started grumbling. They said, "This man is friendly with sinners. He even eats with them." Jesus, the friend of sinners. Isn't that an interesting thought, an interesting idea? That Jesus was friendly with the sinners. And here, just in these first couple of verses, you know, we see the Pharisees, we see the teachers of the law, and I'm sure there were other groups of people around, but people are busy watching. They're standing at a distance. They're standing in the same room. They're watching what's going on with Jesus. They're interested in Jesus. They want to see the next miracle that he's going to perform. They want to hear the next parable, the next teaching that comes out of his mouth, because this is such a different man. The way that he lives his life, the way that he talks to people is so different. We want to be there to see him. And there's this other group of people, the Pharisees and these teachers of the law, that are standing in the back of the room, probably watching him with contempt. You know, that look, that attitude of, you know, we're sitting here and we're going to watch just to see what you do wrong. Maybe the person who walks into the room and pulls out their little notepad, or maybe it's a big notepad, and they're just taking notes. And that's all you see them do. You know that they're not listening to you just for the lesson's sake. They're there to criticize you. And it's always an intimidating situation, isn't it? When you come in with that attitude. They knew who Jesus was. They knew his reputation. They knew all of the labels that were being given to him as he went around doing all of his teachings. They couldn't believe some of the things that he did. They couldn't believe that he would be hanging out with sinners. They knew the miracles that he had performed. They knew that he had healed people on the Sabbath. They knew that he had been hanging out with tax collectors and the outcasts of society. This particular instance was no different. They couldn't believe that he's here, that he's hanging out with all of these sinners. Doesn't he know who they are? Doesn't he know he's hanging out with sinners? People who don't deserve to be around somebody who's supposed to be the King of the Jews? Doesn't he know that he should be hanging out with us? Doesn't he know that we have it all together, that we have it all right, and that he should be with us? They felt the power slipping away from them for years. You know, they had had the grip on society. They were the ones that people looked up to and tried to be like. And here comes this man pulling power away from them. So you can imagine kind of what's going on through their minds. This was the group of people who looked down on everybody else because they were different, because they weren't as good as me, the Pharisee or the teacher of the law. They labeled people as sinners. People were labeled as tax collectors, and you can go on and on. They kicked people out of their assemblies because they were sinners, because they were different, because they weren't good enough. Because you can't associate with sinners, can you? That's such a terrible thing to do because they're so much better, so much holier than everyone else. They couldn't believe that here's Jesus speaking with sinners, to sinners, even sitting down to eat with them. Somehow, this small group of people managed to overlook the fact that they're sinners too. A very simple fact, that this holier-than-thou attitude somehow doesn't make them any better. It's amazing to me how blind people can be to that sometimes. We're so quick as human beings and as individuals to look down on people, when in fact we're in the same boat. You and I are sinners too. Even though we wear the name Christian, we still sin. We were sinners when we put Christ on in baptism. We're all still sinners in need of God's grace. So we have to be careful, I think, because we bear that name. That name stands for something. When you claim to be a Christian, when you claim to be a part of the way that follows Christ, we're supposed to be Christ-like in everything that we do. In the way that we handle ourselves, in the way that we have relationships with people. We're supposed to be that way. When more often than not, I think we might find ourselves more Pharisee-like than we are Christ-like. You can only imagine the thoughts that are probably running through Jesus' head right now. I know that's one of the first things that comes to my mind. When I'm reading these verses, this is what the people say, and here's Jesus, and he knows what they're thinking. What is Jesus thinking? You can almost feel probably a little bit of anger inside of him as he's like, I can't believe these people. You know, don't they know any better? The amazement at the fact that they've been following him for all of this time and they still don't get it. And maybe even a little bit of sadness at the fact that I'm doing my best, guys. I'm doing my best. How can you not understand it by now? And sometimes I can't help but wonder what he's thinking about us when he sees the way that people are treated in his church. Through all of the emotions, all of the things that Jesus must be feeling at this point, he realizes that this is a prime opportunity to teach them yet again, a prime opportunity for yet another lesson. It's a great chance to show them his way, the way that he would live his life. You know, like Jesus has done through his entire ministry, he invites them to sit down and think about it a little bit. And I love that. That's the beautiful thing to me about Jesus and his teachings, is that he doesn't just throw it out there for you. He doesn't just feed it to you with a spoon like you would a little child. He invites you to think about it, to have to sit there in the chair, probably in amazement going, is he talking about me? Or, what in the world is he talking about? Something that leaves you wondering for the rest of the evening, what's going on? Here in chapter 15, as I mentioned earlier, I think we find three of his more thought-provoking parables, or at least for me they are. They kind of go in this order. We're not going to read them all because it's a lot of reading. But his first parable, here it deals with lost sheep. You know, we have 99 sheep, they're all safe. But we're supposed to have 100. Where is that one? Most people would say, yeah, I got 99. That's pretty good. And just walk away. But not this particular shepherd. You go after that one sheep because that one sheep is so valuable to you. You go out through the wind, through the storm, into the highest, steepest canyons just to find that one sheep. And when you find that sheep, you come back. And what do? You throw a party. You have a celebration because there's so much rejoicing in heaven over that one sheep that was found. The second parable deals with the lost coins. You have 10 coins. You lose one somewhere in your house. We can all relate to that, can't we? When we lose our keys, when we lose our cell phones, young people, when we lose our wallets, and we don't know where it is, and we tear the house apart until we find it, don't we? Unless you've got one of those little key finder things. Those are pretty cool. But we tear the house apart looking for it, trying to find where we lost. You can almost picture the woman as she's moving all of the furniture, as she's turning the couch over, as she's tearing the carpet off the floor to find this one coin. And she finally finds it. And what does she do? She invites all of her friends over for a party. We come to the third one, the lost son. The prodigal son, we call him a lot. The foolish son that asks for all of his money and takes it off and spends it all. And finally, in despair, he makes his way home to his father's house, just expecting to be thrown in with all of the servants. But he gets a surprise, doesn't he? When his dad sees him from afar off, and the dad comes running out and greets him, throws his arms around him, and brings him home. And what does he do? He throws a huge party, doesn't he? There's so many interesting little details in all three of these parables. I think that he gives them, at least for me, an order of value here. We start with the sheep. A lot of people are like, sheep, who cares about a sheep? You know, not many people, at least in this area, raise sheep anymore. So a sheep is not that big of a deal for us. But then we come to the second parable, and we're dealing with money. And money for some people is a lot bigger deal. You're like, man, you lose one coin, you've got to go find that coin. That's something that we can relate to. But then you come down to the third parable, and here we are with probably the most valuable thing of the three, your own son. Your own son that was gone, your own son that went out and messed it up big time. And here he comes back. He gives us, I believe, a new way to look at sinners, to look at people in general. That they're not just sinners, that they're property of God, that they have value, that they're, that they're like little lost children. A new way to look at sinners. He also gives us, I think, a reason to celebrate. Did you notice the celebration in all three of these stories? It's not just, oh, hey, found my sheep, that's cool. Or, oh yeah, found my coin. Or, oh yeah, Bobby, he came home the other day. That was pretty neat. Glad he came back, glad he's back. It was a party, wasn't it? It was a celebration. So often we regulate it into the realm of solemn approval, when I believe that it's something to be celebrated, something that we should be so joyous about, and not just sit there straight-faced. As wearers of the name Christian, we have to be so careful in the way that we deal with our relationships with people. In the way that we treat people is so important, because it's easy for us as human beings, as people sitting in the pews, to label people, to judge them as soon as they walk through the doors, because you can see how they're dressed. You already know everything about them before they even say hi to you, don't you? It's so easy for us to let them know that we have this predetermined idea about who you are or what you are. And we're pretty sure that you don't fit in here. In psychology, there's this idea of the self-fulfilling prophecy. That I think, therefore I am type principle. It's that, you know, if you wake up in the morning thinking, you know, this is going to be a terrible, terrible day. It's the theory that if you wake up with that thought, you're going to go through the rest of the day, and the actions and the things that you do are going to point you towards a terrible day, because that's the way you woke up thinking. Self-fulfilling prophecy. When people are labeled, there's always the potential for them to live up to that labeling. There's always that potential for them to live up to the labeling. As Christians, I think we have to change our thinking, don't we? We've got to be positive and welcoming people. When new people come through the door, when people that you don't recognize, when people that might be dressed a little bit differently than we are come through those doors, we have to be positive. We have to be welcoming with a smile and make them feel like they have a part. Because people can feel it when you're being fake. I don't know if you realize that or not. People know when we're being fake with them, when we're not being real with them. They know deep down in their hearts that you've already got them labeled. And we can't label. We can't judge on appearance because people are so much more than that. We have to gain the ability to look past that outer shell. You know, we have to look at them that they are lost sheep. They are the coin. They are the lost son because they're people. They have value and they have worth. We've got to remember as well that we were the sheep. That we were that coin. We were the son that was gone away. And you and I have been found just like they have been found. And because of that, we can't reject people. We can't reject anybody that comes into this building. Isn't it interesting that each of these so-called sinners by the Pharisees and the scribes were of more value than anyone else in that room? More value, more valuable than these righteous men? More valuable than 99 sheep in the fold? More valuable than 9 coins out of 10. More valuable than 1 son out of 2. I don't know about you, but there's one label that I want to be able to add to my list of names as a Christian. And that's the friend of sinners. And it's such a struggle sometimes to be that welcoming person, to be that positive person, to be the person who reserves judgment until you really meet someone and get to know them, isn't it? It's so against our culture because we find judgment everywhere we turn, don't we? In everything that we do, there is some form of judgment upon us. But as Christians, as wearers of that name, we have to fight to reserve judgment. I want to challenge us this week as we go out to change the way that we see people, to change the way that we value the people that we run into every day, to change the way that we relate to people, because we really are all sinners, aren't we? If there's anything that we can help you with tonight, I don't know where you are on your walk. I hope that this is something that you can make your goal too. If there's anything that we can pray for you tonight, if there's a need for you to be baptized tonight, we ask that you please come as we stand and sing.